TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. Get in the know. Non-stop Vikings talk. It's Purple Daily on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Hey, welcome back to Tales from 2010, a Vikings season like no other. Brian Murphy and Judd Zolgad taking a trip down memory lane and joined by former Vikings linebacker Chad Greenway, two-time Pro Bowler, 10-year veteran. 2010 was right in the wheelhouse of your career right then. You guys were coming off the 2009 season, of course, in the NFC Championship game loss to New Orleans. 10 years later, as you kind of look back and put your career into perspective, if you do that once in a while, how do you begin to explain 2010?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Fun to be on. 2010, yeah, smack dab in the middle of my career for the most part, a little in the early front end. But, you know, you come off the 09 season and, you know, wildly successful. You have Brett Favre, just a crazy amount of stuff going on in 09, a lot of excitement, a lot of fun. And then you have it kind of end in the craziness. And there was New Orleans and all that. And well documented, the loss, the tough loss, and kind of the way it went down. And then you come back for 2010 I don't think you can draft up a bizarre, crazy, up and down, you know, year. It's actually kind of unbelievable to talk about when you think about the scope of an NFL season and how much happened in that 5 to 6 month window. It's pretty incredible.
Hey, Chad, at what point in time did it occur to you that this was, you know, to use your word, an incredible or bizarre year? Because, I mean, weird things do take place. But what was the event for you that was the tipping point of, I'll probably won't go through a year like this again in my career?
Oh, gosh. The collapse of the metric. I don't know if there was one thing that happened that was like, yeah, this is ridiculous. If I could point to one thing, probably playing outdoors at TCF. I think that was like we had gotten beyond the majority of the craziness. And then there's just like play on this frozen field. You're literally calling fans up the week of to, you know, for paying them $20, slipping them $20 an hour to go, you know, clean out snow out of the TCF. And I remember walking on there for pregame and remember how hard the turf was. And then for it to be like, you know, Brett's last game, how that all went down. It's just, I mean, you add that to the layer. That would probably be the moment for me where you look and be like, holy cow, what else is going to happen this year? And can this thing get over with?
That was the thing. It became sort of almost a death march at the end. And old man Winter had his last laugh in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Not only that, you get through, the Giants games moved to Detroit. You get through that experience. Then it's about, are we going to be able to play outdoors? And it snowed like hell that night. And you get through that. And then the next week, you fly into Philadelphia on Christmas Day, only to find out you're not going to play for 4 days. I guess boredom was your next enemy.
Yeah, you know, my wife talks about that a lot because I can remember very vividly, you know, obviously playing football, you play around the holidays, and that was, you know, it's common in the NFL. You miss holidays, you make sacrifices. And I can remember having Christmas early with the kids and then having to bounce out, like go catch the plane. Like it was, you know, like at 1 o'clock and you jump on the plane, you fly out and you get out there and then, oh, honey, I'm going to leave on Christmas Day and I'll be back in like 5 days. But I'll be at the Four Seasons and, I'll have about 30 cheese steaks and, you know, you can have the two kids. I think at that point we had two kids. Yeah. And it's just chaos. I mean, if you really lay it out, I don't know how in depth you want to get about this, but if you lay it out like on a bullet point basis of what went down, it's actually astonishing. And, you know, things that get overlooked. Fired a coach, right? Randy Moss comes in and leaves in a month, 5 weeks, whatever it was. The Randy Moss thing in the locker room. I wouldn't feed that ish to my dogs. I mean, it really goes on and on. You talk about how the craziness of playing a home game in Detroit. I cannot tell you guys how weird that was to walk out into a stadium that didn't have a home team. You know, the colors were like, if you could describe the colors of the stadium, it was like gray. You know, nobody knew, and it wasn't the Lions, you know, road grays they wear sometimes. And it was weird.
That was the fans being allowed in for free to Detroit as well. And Chad, of all the places, to send a football team, Murph, no offense here, but Detroit, Michigan in December was probably not the first choice. You know, possibly Atlanta, right? Or something like that. And you end up going to Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, and now you look at what, like, you know, the Niners doing because of COVID and all the craziness and scheduling this year. It's like, we're ahead of our time in 2010. You know, in COVID in 2020, this is like, it must be the decade thing because this year, this is like kind of becoming normal. You know, a Wednesday afternoon game that only like half the country can get on TV. And it's like, it's a massively important game. Like, you think back to 2010, like, we are so far ahead of our time. We are playing on Tuesdays and we are playing in other people's home stadiums. And we had some fans in Detroit, but they weren't our own. So it was just bizarre. And I think when you could legitimately do an hour story on each one of the things I named. And when you put it in totality, it becomes a book, right? It's just, it's unfathomable how it all kind of went together. And I think the funniest part is when you scale it all the way back to the beginning, and the arm twisting that had to occur to get Brett to even come back. Then you talk about the shenanigans that Brett had to go through personally. It adds up.
Well, let's go back to camp. So how are you? You were a pretty big deal at that time. How did you not get a seat on that plane?
I'm scared of flight. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I mean, at that point, you have to remember, you know, I was, what, year five? So I was kind of becoming my own. I obviously was playing well and a big part of the game that way, but I wasn't necessarily like a big time, what I would call, you know, leader. You know, you had so many guys that had been there, done that, you know, future current Hall of Famers that were on the team that were kind of playing a bigger role when it comes to that and flying down and getting Brett. I can remember Steve Hutch busting into my door at training camp. You know, I'm just trying to, like, you know, just abide the time and watching some, probably, you know, who knows, some show or something. And he busts in the door and said, "We got to get on the plane. We're going down to Mississippi. We're going to get him and bring him back. And, you know, he's going to ride in like the night." And I'm like, and, you know, I remember the first thing is like, well, if he doesn't want to play, like, do we really want him? Like, that was my first thought. But then it's like, well, it's Brett Favre and he's come off 09 when you're, you know, you have, to me, you know, the most success, you know, I would end up having in my career in a year. And you're like, yeah, all right, that sounds better than what we got. Let's do it. And that's no disrespect to anybody, but he's Brett Favre. He's immortality. But I don't know how I didn't get a spot on the plane. I don't necessarily, other than the fact that I could have just added to my story. I don't know what else I could have, you know, what I could have got out of it. I don't know. It was just adds to the ridiculousness.
So Chad, day one of camp, from an outside perspective, those of us in the press, or I think the fan base, all basically thought, okay, Brett's not going to Mankato, which he didn't, you know, in 2009. That's not surprising. But I think we were all convinced he's coming back for sure at some point in time. With what you knew at that time, how sure of a bet was it to you that at some point, once you got back to Eden Prairie, Brett Favre was going to show up?
I think I was probably 50-50, honestly. I knew there was a chance that he was done, and the way it ended in 09 with him being bruised and battered and the age and the whole thing. I mean, you know, it's hard to come back even for myself. I was in the, you know, what you would call the prime of your career, and it was hard to come back from 09. So for him to get back on the saddle again seemed like it was a stretch. But at the same time, you know, when you play with Brett, and you guys were in the locker room enough to see him in action in the locker room and be a part of that, he loves the game. He loves being around the guys. And you could tell it was going to be really hard for him to let that go until, inevitably, you know, he was forced out by Corey Wooten and the Bears, you know, and that's kind of the way it went. And it's probably the way it was going to have to end for him. So I was legitimately, I was honestly 50-50. But in the back of your mind, you wondered how he would just walk away. You know, he just knew he'd have a hard time.
There was so much optimism going into 2010, and there was so much talk of what was left on the field and unfinished business. Mm-hmm. So once you got Favre back, you had all 22 starters back, and that's a rarity in the NFL. Yeah. It always hurt. Exactly. And there was this vibe of, well, we're just going to plug back in and play. But it quickly turned out, you know, the first couple of weeks, you went back down to New Orleans on that Thursday night. It was a close game, but the offense wasn't clicking. Then you had a Miami loss at home, and suddenly the vibes are like, this just isn't right. What seems to be wrong? What was it like to kind of sense that, okay, it's not going to be as convenient as we thought it might be?
Yeah, it was definitely that Miami game. That was no question about it. I think, you know, you go to New Orleans and you knew we didn't play very well defensively. If I can remember, we played pretty well defensively and held them to a pretty low score. But then we just didn't do much offensively. Coming back to next week, when you lose to a Miami team that was just kind of like a typical Miami team, it was just kind of meh. And they had the running game and they had some ability down there. But it wasn't a team that should have beat us. And I think that was when, after week two, you're like, okay, now you're, you know, the year before, I think we went, 6-0, 7-0 to start, whatever it was, I think 6-0. And now you're in a whole 0-2, you know, and you just didn't feel good about it. It didn't have the same vibe. And you know, to be in the locker room enough that when you go 0-2, nobody's happy. Nobody's high on the horse. Nobody's having fun. And when you have all those egos and all those we have to win right now mentalities because of the age of the guys, right, and the ability of the guys, as you knew the time was fleeting. It wasn't a great locker room to be in, especially early on in 2010, and it kind of set the stage for what happened.
Chad, when did Brad change as well? Because Brad sort of, as that year progressed, things got more and more prickly, especially, I think, with him and Brett, and it didn't seem good from day one with Moss. When did Brad go from, you know, to 2009, things went great, to sort of being uptight about things again? Because I sensed a return in his demeanor to 2006 more so by some point.
Yeah, he kind of got that defensive edge back to him, I think. You know, you kind of feel that. And I think he had that in 09, but, you know, winning cures a lot of things. And you guys have seen that. And I think that was part of it. I think that animosity and grudge, that almost like, this is my team. No, this is my team. We're going to do it this way. And you know, it's hard to rein in a guy like Brett. And I think that was what Chile always wanted, was to rein him in and kind of have, you know, so he could kind of, for lack of a better way to put it, take the credit for everything. And I think that was part of the issue. And you could just feel it change and shift the locker room, the dynamic. And you felt like they were grasping for straws with Randy. And then you bring Randy in, which is a whole nother personality dynamic of, hey, I'm going to do things 100% my way. And you can just piss off if you don't like that. And that's what totally how it was. And you kind of felt like Chile was just losing control, losing the power. And it didn't help him that he didn't have complete power. And that's what ended up inevitably doing him in when he made the decision on his own to let go of Randy. That's what kind of ended when we come back to Green Bay and get our butts whooped. And they're like, oh, okay, this isn't going to work. And we moved on. So, yeah, I mean, it just kind of all played itself out. And it kind of, you know, guys couldn't get out of their own ways. That's really what it was.
You know, the Randy Moss experiment 2.0 will go down in team history as one of the highest and the lowest in the shortest amount of time. I mean, you guys come out of the bye. I think you had beaten Detroit, so you took the edge off of 0-2. During the bye, you trade for Randy Moss. And everybody in town, he comes in, he's all smiles, get those 84 jerseys back out. And it's like, okay, if Sidney Rice is hurt, this is the solution. You've got a downfield threat. Not only that, he's a superstar with roots in history here. Brett Favre, Randy Moss. All right, we're back on track. Everything's going to happen. It didn't happen that way, and it ended in an even more bizarre fashion.
Yeah, you know, it really did. And I think when I can remember, listen, I grew up watching the Vikings, knowing Randy, watching a lot of Randy's games. And I mean, this guy is, I mean, he's HOF. He walks in the field and he's just different. The way he jogs, the way he goes about his business. And I remember the first day, you know, he comes out, we're watching him run routes and we're watching him practice. I'm like, this dude doesn't work hard at all. Like, this guy's just going through the motions. And I get it, right? I mean, you're Randy Moss and, you know, I'm never was going to be on his level and I'm not on that level. But one thing I know I couldn't do was just, you know, half jog around and not give a care. And that's what it seemingly really was. And again, that was just Randy's way. This is the way he did it. And it worked with Tom Brady. It had worked early in his career because of his ability. And it probably would have worked had it been like 09 and things were going better. Because you know that Randy, not that he's a front runner, but if things were going good, he'd have been better. I mean, it's just the way it is. But he walked into a situation where he thought he could turn it around. It wasn't going to happen. We weren't that team. And it went downhill really quickly. And I mean, it was just, you know, it still was, you know, break, move outside, throw your hand up. But there was just no cash at the end of that hand this time.
Chad, what was that month like? Like that, the month of Moss, what was that internally from day one to the last day when Brad cuts him and does a press conference. And Sansevier flat out asked him, did you cut Moss? Because this seems weird. And Brad's like, no. And then we go across the street and there's a, you know, we basically are told he's been cut. What was that? I think it was 28 days. What was that like as a player?
Well, I can tell you that it was, I internalized real quickly. When I knew things were hitting the fan, I'm like, you know what? I'm coming up to a contract year. I need to worry about Chad Greenway's lawn and mow that thing really well because I need to get paid. I need to get another contract, and I want to take care of myself. But you could just feel the tension and the strain. I mean, it was just horrible. I mean, from the excitement to, hey, we have a really cool weapon. This is a Hall of Fame where we're going to see him finish his career to bam. And we're just down. And you know, from the locker room incident to the on-field antics to after the New England game when he was basically, you know, crying and wishing he was back in New England and playing for Belichick and Brady. And we're just like, you know, we had just lost a game, a tough game out in New England. We'd actually given him a game, which was great. And, you know, he says this stuff and you can kind of see he wants to be a part of that. And you just knew it wasn't going to work. I had been around enough at that point to know that things were going to end badly for him. Didn't really realize all what would transpire over the next 2 months. But yeah, it was not going well. And you could just feel, you can feel that building at Winter Park it holds a lot of secrets in those old walls. you know, that's it's hurt a lot.
Probably some bodies too.
Yeah, well, maybe.
You know, Jeff was talking about the sequence of events. So Childress had his press conference and said nothing about Moss. We found out 20 minutes later he's cut. And then poor Ben Lieber is the only guy that shows up in the Vikings locker room about an hour later and has to take all the bullets for all of that. Just handed out like union leaflets or something. How did you send him out there to the firing squad and nobody else came with him?
Oh, I'm glad it worked out that way. Now looking back, you know, I'm sure I was hiding in the training room like we always did, you know, hide out in the training room and just try to avoid anything we could possibly avoid. And I'm sure I came up with some sort of ankle injury or something. I need to go nurse in there, you know, so I didn't have time for questions that day. But, yeah, you know, probably was the best guy to send out, to be honest with you. He probably had the most information and probably knew the best way to conceal what we needed to conceal. But I think, you know, the craziest part was we really didn't know. I mean, we didn't know what the hell was going on. I mean, there were so many things in the background, and especially not knowing who really did have the power under that regime and that kind of what they call the triangle of power of what it was, is nobody really knew who was making the decision. That ended up being the problem when Chile went off and kind of did his own thing. And I think that was part of the problem as a team, is we didn't know who to answer to, right? And I think that was – it just leads to the demise, the downfall, and then the restructure, which they did for a much better way.
So Brad, what was the sole responsibility for cutting Moss, though, correct?
As far as I knew.
That was Brad's deal?
That's the story I got, and kind of the feeling in the room was that's, you know, that's what had happened.
Hey, Chad, how far did Moss go to ruining is probably too strong of a word, but to sullying Percy? Because, you know, Percy had the great 09. And then from what I've been told is when Moss got there, Percy worshipped him, basically. And that when Moss turned on Childress, Percy did too. How much did that dynamic change Percy in your mind as far as the guy that we had seen in 2009 to then 2010?
Yeah, I mean, I think it had a part of it. I think that was always in Percy. I really do. I think that rebuffing authority and coaches had been in his past. And I think we had all known that. And what he had accomplished in 09 and the, you know, the trajectory we all saw him taking. I mean, this was a guy who was as freaky as Adrian, as far as I was concerned. If you're going to look at the, you know, the physical freaks that I played with, you know, Percy's in the top three. There's no question. And you could see that. I don't think Randy certain. I think he probably sped the process up and he probably was like, listen, this is how the game works. This is how you have to get yours. And you're not going to, you know, if they're not throwing to you and they're not doing this, then you need to make sure you throw your hands and raise a fit. And that certainly happened. And, you know, what ended up happening is it kind of fell on Frazier more than anybody. You know, when things moved on and Chile moved on, it kind of fell to Leslie. And we all know Leslie and how great of a person and really how great of a coach he is and how steady he is. He just didn't have the wherewithal to know what he was getting himself into and how he's going to handle it. Now, at the end of the day, I thought they handled it well. You know, Percy made his own story and got out of there and ended his career pretty quickly after that. But the reality was, is Randy didn't help Percy. You know, he may have thought he was trying to help him, but at the end of the day, he hurt him because he put this idea in his head that he needed to be somebody that that at that time, Percy wasn't. I mean, Percy was a team guy. I'm going to practice hard guy. I'm going to do it the right way. Didn't say a peep. And then all of a sudden he gets a little mouthier and you know, and ends up walking himself out of there, which were, you know, he's a guy that should have played there for 10 years plus and made a bunch of money.
Let's put a bow on the Childress saga and then move on. But so you get to this game at the Metrodome. You're 3-6. The Packers are in town. And it was about as ugly an ending as you can get. In fact, I don't remember the Metrodome being that surly before. I mean, it was a 31-3 loss, but I seem to remember Ray Edwards and Chris Cook going at it on the sidelines, and they were chanting "Fire Childress." I mean, the inevitable was going to happen, but just kind of the vibe there, there was really no turning back, I don't think.
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, you could just feel it. You know, it was just such a bad performance. We weren't prepared. Our heads were not there. I mean, this is the Packers. This is a game that we should have, you know, for all intents and purposes, walked away and won. I mean, to be honest with you, with the ability we had and the talent, but that's just what shows you what you can do when you're not prepared, when you're not ready, your head's not there, your coaching staff's head's not there. And they were worried about all the wrong things. And it was just, I have to say, I was really surprised it ended that quickly for Chile, to think he was in the NFC title game the year before. But it was more than that. It was bigger. It was the decisions. It was how he handled things. It was the defensiveness. It was needing to control and the power. And that's just the way it ended. And honestly, I don't know that it helped a whole lot, but it did make, which was the disaster of those next 6 weeks. It made it probably a little easier for everybody because it was Leslie and not Chile. I love Chile. I mean, he drafted me. He brought me in. He was always really good to me and my family. But I just think under the circumstances and the pressure that was going to lead that next 6 weeks, it would have been even worse than it would have been with Leslie. So,
all right, now let's talk about what was supposed to be the Giants game at the Metrodome. What did you know? When were you told? And what is your reaction as a guy who was supposed to play on Sunday to literally the roof collapsing? Like, up until then, it's like the roof is falling on the Vikings. but take us through the night before, when I think you guys met and were at least told that the dome was leaking pretty badly. Just the whole reaction to finding out your roof had collapsed on your stadium.
Yeah, so we had gone down. I always picked up Ben Lieber on the way down. So we drove. I lived out in the Wayzata Plymouth or Wayzata Minnetonka area, and I drove into Edina, grabbed Lieber, and I can remember the road was like 62 being horrible, and then driving in and picking him up and then driving up to the city, and it was just, you know, cars on the side of the road and the snowstorm. It was a legit snowstorm as Minnesotans go. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And then we had a team meeting that said there were some issues with the Metrodome, but we didn't find out until the next morning. As far as I remember, I'm trying to think back like how that all, you know, the timeline is hard to think back. But I'm pretty sure it was in the morning when we actually found out that what had happened. And we got, as far as I remember, we got a meeting right away in the morning. Here's our plan. We're going to go home. And then, oh, by the way, now we're going to travel and fly, which I think we did that same day, if I remember right, because we played on Monday. So
you did.
It happened really fast. And then the video came out of the guy. You can see the guy on the cart, you know, driving and speeding away. And, like, you're just really thankful and grateful nobody got hurt. And could imagine it being, you know, at noon that next day and having 70,000 screaming fans in there with that ice melting. And thank God that didn't happen. And, you know, it's funny now if you can talk about it because nobody passed away and nobody lost their life. And but it's just something you would never in a million years expect to happen. And there it was right after the firing, right after moving on and the disastrous game against the Packers. And now you move into this situation and it was bizarre.
You know, you touched upon playing at TCF Bank Stadium in the snow. Nobody knew at that point that the Metrodome was going to run its course. The Vikings were going to get a new stadium deal, and then they would play two seasons
right
at TCF Bank Stadium, including that bitter cold playoff game against Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like an anomaly at the time. What was it like to play outside in a home game?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I actually, you know, so the Bears game playing outdoors at TCF, that first original one, the hardest part was the turf was froze. So they hadn't made all those changes to the stadium and the field. And literally you're taking two, you know, whatever snowfall we got previous to us playing in Detroit to put the Metrodome down was that same snow they were moving off of TCF so we could play a home game. And so that was really the thing. I can remember my dad was there, my mom was there. I remember them throwing snow in the air, and it was kind of a fun environment until Devin Hester goes like 75 down the sidelines for the 300th time against the Vikings. But, you know, it was really a fun environment. I remember making a shoestring tackle, diving and sliding on, like, ice shards for, like, 10 yards. I'm sure it was not that long, but it seemed that way. And it was fun to be back outdoors. And then fast forward a few years later, we're actually playing home games outdoors. And, I mean, I loved it.
It's got coils, though, by that point, oh, yeah. Right? As I recall, that game was played on Monday night. There was the 50th anniversary of the team at the convention center on Sunday. And I seem to recall that you guys went to TCF Bank Stadium for a walkthrough to look at the stadium at some point on Sunday. And Chris Cluey, of all people, tweets out, "Everybody's worked really hard and we appreciate it, but you can't play this game because the turf is going to be frozen solid and somebody's going to get killed." And Chad, I went then to the party that night, and I think it was a Vikings employee ran up to me and it's like, "That's the punter. Don't listen to him. It's absolutely fine. It's going to be nope." And then, of course, in the craziness that was 2010, lo and behold, the person that damn near gets killed is Brett Favre.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, and Cluey, for all his, you know, faults and loud mouth at times, I mean, he wasn't wrong. I mean, that's the thing, is he was 100% right. And, you know, I guess when I played, I never really took those things into consideration, like my own health and safety. I mean, I'm playing linebacker in the NFL. I knew I was at risk pretty much every time I walked onto a field. So I wasn't really that concerned about that, to be honest with you. But then at the same time, you know, you crack your head against that turf or you get pushed the wrong way, and it can obviously be very, very traumatic. And you know, then you play the game, and then what ends up happening to Brett is exactly what you all feared. I mean, basically it was a career ender, a hit that ended it. And like I said kind of earlier on, is that was probably the only way that Brett was going to, quote unquote, end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess it saved Brett from further damaging, probably, because he got out at least in one piece.
Well, I'll wrap it up here with you, Chad. Just a couple quick more questions. When you look back, so much happened in that 18-month period of time. Some of it, the franchise had a long time to get over that before, you know, kind of getting stable again. Do you think you left it, the opportunity in New Orleans, ultimately January of 2010, that was the moment, that was sort of the peak right there? And if it couldn't get done then, it just wasn't realistic, maybe the next season, to think you could.
Yeah, I do. I think it was one of those situations where we were peaking, we smashed the Cowboys, we're coming down. I mean, we couldn't overcome the turnovers. In my opinion, we were the better team, but you can't turn the ball over, whatever it was, six times in a game and win. And that was our shot. I mean, you know, when Brett throws it back across his body and throws the pick and we couldn't finish in overtime, that was the game. And that was, you know, unfortunately for my career, looking back at 11 years, that was my best opportunity with the best quarterback I played with. That was playing really good at that time with a really good veteran team. That's a team that wins the Super Bowl a lot of times in the NFL. If things can go your way, they just didn't. I don't let New Orleans that year. I don't let that be a negative mark on my career. That's the highest level I got to. I played 9-man football in South Dakota, and I ended up playing in the NFC Championship game in 2009 and played well and had fun and played in front of one of the loudest stadiums in history. And so I don't let people bring me down on that. I celebrate it. I embrace it. I have great memories from it and the scars from it as well. That's sports. That's what it's all about. You love it. You hate it. It makes you cry multiple directions, and it is what it is. But, you know, you just look back now and think, with that group of players, that was our shot. It really was. And then, you know, you move forward and you had the McNabb experiments that was clearly a fail, and the Ponder that was a fail. And then you know, unfortunately for me at the end of my career, it was Teddy. You know, Teddy is the guy that I thought would have taken us to, was that kind of quarterback that could have taken us back to that position with the team we had. Cause our team was just, it was built differently than the 10 team and the 9 team. But you know, and Teddy gets hurt when he was primed to have just an absolute killer year. And that's my career is you can sort of the Browns fan quarterback list on the back of the jersey that reaches the anchor. So, you know, now we just get stories to tell when we're drinking our Grey Duck vodka.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was going to say, how's retirement treating you, and what are you up to these days?
Yeah, it's going great. We have four kids. So 13 down to three, or four now. She's turned four. So, raising kids, I coach youth basketball, run around to youth soccer, Just love it. I run the Youth Basketball Association out here in Wayzata for the community. So about 500 girls from second to eighth grade. I love that. I love hoops, and it's kind of become my life. My girls love sports and are doing quite well. So it's going to be fun to track them. You guys will be following them in no time. And then we have Grey Duck Vodka. So we started that 2 years ago. That's been going tremendously well. Our fan support beyond me, beyond the Vikings fans. I mean, I think just Minnesotans in general really love what we do. We just did a specialty label with Chris Hockey, and we gave $19,200 back to Toys for Tots. So we really want to, you know, kind of put our money where our mouth is as a company and be local. And to be local, you have to give back, and that's what we're really doing.
Thanks, Chad. Great stuff, man. Much appreciated.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for the time, man. We really do appreciate it. Just kind of coming back and reminiscing.
You bet. Anytime.
All right, take care.
Thanks, man.